Okay, it's time to talk wheels. It's the Car Guy Show with automotive consumer tips, industry updates, interviews, and enthusiast news. If you care about cars, this show's for you. Now you're tuned in, so let's get tuned up with your host. Here he is, Steve Ford, the Car Guy.
Hello and welcome to another segment of the Car Guy Show here, coming at you from the broadcast tower of Newstalk 990 KTMS and at the speed of light on the World Wide Web. Good morning and thanks for joining us to swoop out into the automotive world for another snapshot of what's going on and where we're going in the world of wheels. The topic up on the lift for today's segment is the future of fuels and propulsion. Diesel is one of the most controversial topics in the area of fuels and power plants here going into the second decade and approaching the third decade of the 21st century. And to join us to bring insight and expertise on the topic is Alan Schaefer, who's Executive Director of the Diesel Technology Forum. And it is my pleasure, Alan Schaefer, to bring you on board on the Car Guy Show to talk to consumers, motorists, and enthusiasts and demystify the world of diesel. Welcome.
Thanks for having us. It's a delight to be with you. And, you know, we're really all about what's the best choice for consumers and for our energy future. So diesel's a great fit with all that, and look forward to talking about it.
I think the excitement would inevitably come from the possibility for good things to happen in the future, regardless of the fuel, whether it's from French fries or from hydrogen or however we power the planet. Almost every day in the news, information and reports about toxic dumps and fuels affecting the atmosphere and exhaust and chemistry and countries struggling with how to reconcile who takes responsibility for the atmosphere, who takes responsibility for the water. And inevitably, the automobile has proven to be both a solution to the need for people to be mobile on the planet. And as you well know, and the audience would really, I think, agree, the car has entered into this 21st century with a lot of question marks around it. And diesel fuel has been recognized for that black, sooty exhaust coming out the exhaust pipe of big trucks. We have electric vehicles and hydrogen, partial zero-emission vehicles, advanced gasoline-powered vehicles that we talk about, and plug-in hybrid electric vehicles you mentioned earlier before we flipped on the mic. You've been executive director of the Diesel Technology Forum since October of 2000, but for 26 years of career experience going back, you have experience in energy, environmental, public health, and transportation, as including work inside of the trucking industry. What was your title in your trucking, your former life?
Vice President of Environmental Policy.
There it is, where you were responsible for the legislative and regulatory aspects of environmental and highway policy. And so the audience might think, well, this fellow sounds like he's really into trucks and diesel, which is true. But what I think is particularly notable, and I appreciate your patience, Alan, allowing me to talk about what I've got from your bio and then toss it back to you. You've got a master's degree in health sciences, environmental and occupational health, and that's from Johns Hopkins University, Bloomberg School of Public Health, and you've got a bachelor of science degree in life sciences from the University of Maryland at College Park. So anybody wondering whether you're sensitive to the impact on our health would have to stop and say, no, we can't accuse them of that because you lived in that area as you came up through your academic studies. Is that a fair introduction on your bio?
It absolutely is.
Okay. So tell us, if you would, what brought you over to this world of diesel, and how's it feel to be working with a topic that's so front and center right now in Washington and Sacramento?
Well, it's really a great opportunity and really a great time, frankly, to be talking about where we're going in the future with our energy and environmental policies in this country and kind of what fuels and technologies are with us today and which ones will be with us in the future.
Right.
And have witnessed, I think, as many of your listeners have, the transformation that's taken place of diesel as something that was on the verge of being banned by the California Air Resources Board and South Coast Air Quality Management District to now a technology that is being embraced for its unique capabilities in terms of reducing our reliance on imported oil, lowering emissions of carbon dioxide, and having near zero emissions of nitrogen oxides and particulates. And this, you know, over a decade we've invested in, the industry has spent billions of dollars in research and development in cleaner fuels and engine technology to completely changed the diesel from an image of black smoke that you mentioned earlier to one of very high technology, highly efficient internal combustion engine.
The black soot may be gone, but the particulates are still there. They're not entirely eliminated. So let me just back up and say, for the audience, let's go real basic for a minute. If the fuel, if diesel has become cleaner as a fuel, that is to say, as it's refined and filtered and processed, that means it's pumped into trucks and cars in a cleaner design from a chemistry standpoint. Do I have that right?
Yes.
How then? Can you give us a basic, what do they have to eliminate? What's been improved?
Really, the key factor in the change in the fuel quality has been the move to ultra-low sulfur diesel. And in the I don't know exactly what the sulfur levels in diesel were in the 1960s, but I can say that in the early 90s, diesel fuel that had not been subject to the new low sulfur standards, naturally occurring can be as high as 5,000 parts per million in crude oil that comes out of the ground. So typically refiners would see sulfur levels in fuel of, several thousand PPMs. But the journey to get to the clean diesel technology we have today began with a ratcheting down and a virtual removal of the sulfur that's in fuel. In fact, diesel fuel has less sulfur in it than gasoline these days.
What is the issue with sulfur? Why is it a factor?
Sulfur is a factor for really two reasons, at least two reasons. One is sulfur is in the combustion process comes out of the combustion process as sulfate and a variety of different chemistry derivations of sulfate.
Great.
which many folks would remember that might contribute to acid rain and smog formation and other things. So,
okay.
So sulfur in and of itself is not necessarily a good thing to have in fuel. So
yeah.
It's a small concern though today from that perspective. So getting sulfur down to near zero levels, and at the pump today, diesel fuel is probably coming in the 6, 7, 8 part per million range. Gasoline is probably in the 30, 40, 50 part per million range, depending on what you're getting. But having sulfur virtually out of the fuel enables the use of advanced emissions control technologies like particulate traps, oxidation catalysts, and other things that can scrub the exhaust and get the near zero emissions that we have today from diesel. So taking sulfur out of fuel is vitally important for that, and it's been a tremendous success story, and California was a major driver in that whole transformation over the last 13, 14 years.
Excellent. That's the clean fuel standpoint. What about now, if I understand it correct, by the way, I appreciate your patience on me slowing down for a moment on defining sulfur. The sulfur topic is about both the, if I can call it this, sort of the synergistic challenge that sulfur and fuel creates, both going through the combustion process and out in the exhaust into the atmosphere, that in order to control combustion in a diesel engine to reduce emissions, you have to have emission control technology added to the diesel power plant and platform that cannot tolerate sulfur to do its job as well. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah, the analogy is it's just like taking lead out of gasoline.
I was thinking that. So the catalytic converter in the conventional gasoline-powered internal combustion automobile, you need to have unleaded gas to have that catalytic converter work. And once you have the unleaded gas, that catalytic converter can be increased in its efficiency. Otherwise, the lead would kill the catalytic converter.
That's correct? It.
Okay. So that covers the sulfur and fuel. Thank you. And I know we're going elementary here. I'll try to accelerate into the present issues. But in terms of the background, getting rid of sulfur and fuel, number one, on the clean fuel topic. And then the particulates. I think that's the one everybody can relate to, because the stories that have come out in mainstream press have cited the fact that there's soot in conventional diesel of the past, and you have technologies in your stakeholders, vehicles and power plants, that are capturing that soot. Can you tell us about the elementary side of that to demystify the particulate issue?
Particulates are a byproduct of any internal combustion engine. So whether you're running gasoline, ethanol, biofuels, whatever it is, in an internal combustion engine, you're going to have some amount of unburned hydrocarbons that are emitted as gases and as particles. And the particulates are the solid fraction, as we like to think of them. The technologies to control particulates, though, also are quite effective. And today we have many diesel cars, all diesel cars that are out there today have the most advanced particulate filters in their exhaust systems that are available. And actually, in many cases, some of the new diesel cars probably have lower particulate emissions than some of the new gasoline direct-injected engines.
Direct-injection conventional gasoline engines are generating more particulates than non-direct-injection gasoline engines? Do I have that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so folks would appreciate, they're familiar with cars that used to have carburetors. We've shifted to vehicles that have fuel injection, but direct injection differs from fuel injection in that, like a diesel vehicle has fuel injected directly into the cylinder under very, very high pressure, the elimination of fuel injection into a direct injection engine means instead of the fuel injection system injecting the fuel in a hallway, if you will, of low pressure as the air-fuel mixture is coming into the intake, through the intake valve into the combustion chamber of a conventional gasoline engine. In direct injection, it's not in the hallway coming in before the intake valve. It's directly into that volatile, nasty combustion chamber. So it's a pretty intense world, but it's given efficiencies of power and fuel efficiency that are a benefit. Now, that sounds maybe for some a little bit technical, but what I want to clarify is direct injection now is exactly what's in the diesel engine, right? The diesel fuel is injected, people would understand who don't know technology, diesel fuel is injected directly into the combustion chamber on a diesel engine.
That's right. And not all gasoline engines, I should point out, right now a minority of the newest model gasoline engines use gasoline direct injection, or GDI, as they have making, you know, evolution in all of these technologies to become more fuel efficient and lower emitting.
Right.
This is a case that you might say gasoline engines are trying to mimic some of the fuel efficiency and combustion efficiencies that
the diesel
has.
Of the diesel, yeah. Well, I appreciate, again, you're allowing me to go real basic there. Let's go ahead.
One thing that might be worth putting a final point on that, just so you can understand how it fits in air quality. The inventory of particulate sources in California is quite large, as it is everywhere. It's a diverse mix of many things that are naturally occurring, as well as ones that are man-made. And with the introduction of the cleaner fuel and these advanced engines, you know, that progress is being reflected now, finally, in actually the air quality inventory. So it then will shift focus. You know, and I guess one of the best examples of this is that, you know, in the last year or so, you've heard researchers in Southern California talking about particulate emissions from charbroilers, you know, places that make fast food and hamburger places. That's another form of source of particles that gets into the inventory. So as sort of one area, you know, cleans up and improves, other areas come to light.
The fact that diesel fuel has moved from being one of the targets at the top or higher end, it's actually dropped below others and made them more visible as target things to fix, including flipping burgers at a charbroiler. I wanted to just get some fundamentals here for the audience to join, as I do, in clarifying the role of sulfur in fuel and what's being done with these particulates and why do they matter. Now, consumer acceptance. We look at Europe, we have many decades of diesel as the standard. Most Europeans are very familiar with their everyday drivers being diesel vehicles. There were some issues of diesels being introduced in the United States by domestic manufacturers in the 1980s with some major problems with engines that were designed to run on gasoline being converted to diesel in their designs without complete conversion. That is, they were using gasoline, fundamentally gasoline engines at the blocks and pistons and crankshaft level, when in fact a diesel engine needs to be much more fortified to handle higher compression diesel and so on. So tell us about consumer acceptance and why it matters that we're looking at EVs and hydrogen vehicles and plug-in hybrid electric vehicles, and that diesel has a role here. Can you take us forward then into the positive of what you want us to know, why diesel is relevant and why you are optimistic?
Sure. You know, diesels have, in passenger cars and light trucks, have been available in the U.S., you know, for well over 25 years, and very low levels of penetration into the market, primarily Volkswagen and Mercedes in the early days, back in the 80s and early 90s. And that, as you point out, contrasting to Europe, where consistently for over the last decade, more than 50% of new car sales in Europe have a diesel engine. So, you know, where are we headed in the U.S. with diesel technology. So I think, having invested over the last decade, 13 years or so, to make diesel a clean technology, to be able to meet the same kind of emission standards that gasoline is meeting, and to meet all the requirements from California, that now enables diesel as a technology to look forward in the future and sort of where does it fit in
right.
all these different
right.
fuels and technologies.
Right.
And what you come back to is the inherent energy efficiency of the diesel, that compared to a comparable gasoline engine, you're pretty much looking at anywhere from 20 to 40% better fuel economy. And without any of the kinds of problems or sort of bad things people didn't like about the very old generations of diesel of 20 years ago that you mentioned,
yeah.
Things like performance. And, diesel cars have been winning the Le Mans 24-hour races now for the last couple of years because of the high efficiency and performance of these engines now with the low-end torque is very conducive to the kind of way most Americans like to drive, which is lots of get up and go and get me going to
sure.
highway speeds and where I can move out from there.
Right.
So diesel has a lot of that low-end power,
yeah.
and folks like that.
That's the acceptance side.
right.
Yeah.
Sure. And, the other aspects of it, we have that inherent fuel efficiency advantage over gasoline. And, because of the powertrain's efficiency, it doesn't force consumers into a box to choose a very small car that doesn't fit their family needs but might have very high fuel economy.
Sure.
Yet, it has limited range or won't haul the stuff they need to
haul. Safety considerations people would be concerned about, smaller
sure.
vehicles. Yeah, you can go to diesel and you can go to a larger vehicle and not feel guilty with your fuel consumption. You're getting more efficiencies.
Right. So, okay. So getting diesel to a state of being accepted from an environmental perspective has been a huge milestone. And now because of this energy efficiency, as we look increasingly at reducing emissions of carbon dioxide and other climate concerns, the diesel's energy efficiency comes more clearly into focus. And particularly if you start looking at using high-quality renewable diesel fuels as a blend that will help California meet its future climate change goals.
And climate change is a big part of this topic, yet so is the question of running your car on French fry oil. We'll cover that question when we return from this break at the Car Guy Show on News Talk 990 KTMS.
May I help you?
Yeah, you stock serpentine belts?
Serpentine? What do you have, a snake under your hood? Parts counter, what's up?
Yeah, I need pads and rotors for an 02 Ford Mustang.
Pads and a distributor rotor? You mean pads and drums?
No, pads and rotors. I think I'll try a few more calls.
Larry's Auto Parts, Phil.
I'm looking for pads and front rotors for an 02 Mustang.
Okay, we stocked the pads. What's your concern on the rotors?
Sounds like the pads have just hit metal.
Well, bring them in and let's measure them. There's a good chance we can machine them for a fresh surface and save you money, too.
Well, yeah. Hey, what about windshield wipers?
Well, we stock wipers and we offer free installation. And in most cases, just the refills without buying the entire blade.
More than auto parts, more than service. Along with a national CarQuest brand. Expertise you experience every visit. Larry's 8-Day Auto Parts, Old Town. Goleta, 964-3545. That's 964-3545.
I'm Larry's Auto Parts owner, Phil Unander. Our team is here to be your solution.
Hey, you know about getting the job done right. If you want it done right, do it yourself. Well, that's what car and truck buffs, owners of classics, custom cars, and wise consumers know when they visit Daily Car Bath, Santa Barbara's downtown coin-operated car wash supercenter for more than 40 years. After discovering Daily Car Bath for my own cars, I've returned to give my machines the superior wash and cleaning care that all car buffs appreciate. At Daily Car Bath, you'll find premium hog's hair wash brushes with conditioned soft water and five stalls with foaming high sudsing auto shampoo that literally floats debris off your vehicle's finish, along with consistent high-pressure washing and available non-acid, low-pressure wheel and tire cleaner. And for that special finish, DI&I spot-free rinse to help dissolve and eliminate mineral spot and spray wax formulated with clear coat protectant included in the cycle. See why Daily Car Bath is known as the place where customers send their friends. And take it from a fellow car buff. When it comes to the best in car care appearance, you'll find it all at Daily Car Bath, open 24 hours a day at the corner of Anacapa and Cota Streets. quality, economy, and that showroom shine.
Hey, are you thinking of the ultimate gift for this holiday season? How about a day at the track? And more than just a spectator, we mean high-performance kart racing. At Jim Hall Kart Racing School, race your friends and family. Schedule a party, group, or corporate event, all racing equipment provided, and no license or membership required. Nearby at Ventura County Fairgrounds, a gift to yourself and everyone else.
I'm Jim Hall. Check out our website at jimhallkartracing.com.
Or call Jim Hall Kart Racing School in Ventura at 805-654-1.
When it comes to keeping your wheels looking like new, the majority of auto glass businesses have state-of-the-art tools and equipment. What is harder to find are the industry-certified craftspeople and the highest levels of service. Tri-County Auto Glass. Rock chip repairs or glass replacement with lifetime repair credit, a positive word-of-mouth reputation may bring you in. Courtesy, quality, and that new window glass shine will bring you back. Tri-County Auto Glass, downtown Santa Barbara, 963-6200. That's 963-6200.
In the old-time movies, you used to see an automobile junkyard as a place with rusty old wrecks and big cranes scrapping obsolete machines. Those days were black and white, and today's a world of digital full color. And in the new era of the green car, Steelhead Auto Recycling is at the leading edge of used auto parts. As new and future cars approach 100% recyclability, more than 70% of even older car and truck parts find new life as they come back in service at Steelhead Auto Recyclers, which means huge savings for you. You'll save on major parts such as engines and transmissions, but you can also repair and refresh your wheels with money-saving body trim and accessory parts, from hubcaps to glass, doors, fenders, taillights, and accessories. With a full-service counter and national parts search power and the new self-service section at Steelhead Auto Recycling, you'll save both ways. Plus the security of a full 90-day warranty on all parts. Digital on the web at buyused.net or analog by phone at 683-8557. That's 683-8557. Steelhead Auto Recycling.
The Car Guy Show with you here on News Talk 990 KTMS, talking about diesel with Alan Schaefer from the Diesel Technology Forum. And Alan, diesel has a place in the range of fuels and power plants.
So the diesel is right there in the mix with all these advanced technologies, hybrid vehicles, battery electrics, et cetera.
Sure. In one of your press releases, it says sales of new clean diesel vehicles are up almost 10% at 9.7%. So you might say consumers are gobbling them up, which is fun in quotes for the turkey weekend or Thanksgiving weekend. Now, as executive director of the Diesel Technology Forum, I would ask you, for people just joining or who joined after the start of the show, they might appreciate knowing we're talking about diesel fuel, and we're in California, but we're talking with a gentleman who's the executive director of the Diesel Technology Forum out of Washington, D.C. You've touched upon the efficiencies of the fuel, and we've addressed the particulates, the sulfur in fuel. That means cleaning up the actual diesel fuel going into the tank. I'm going to lead up to a couple of final questions as we wrap up. I know there's so much more to cover, Alan, by the way. You've been really thoughtful. You talk about biodiesel in today's media and the consumer hearing that. And the joke people hear, and I think it's a joke, I don't know if it's true, you can verify the reality of this. Can you back up to a fast food place that makes French fries, have them dump the oil from the French fries into a bucket, let you filter that, and put it into the tank of your diesel-powered vehicle? Can you burn vegetable oil in today's modern diesel engines? Please set the record straight on what you want people to understand from somebody who lives in the diesel world about these myths or realities about biodiesel and then French fries.
Well, you know, the diesel engine has a long history with bio-based fuels. In fact, Rudolf Diesel, the inventor of the diesel, actually, the engine first ran on peanut oil. So there's a long history there with how this engine can utilize a wide range of fuels. Pretty much all the manufacturers are selling cars and trucks today allow you to use a blend of up to 5% biodiesel and 95% ultra-low sulfur diesel in their vehicles. So if that's available, the pump would probably be labeled to suggest that there's a blend of biofuel in there. And if it's a high-quality fuel and properly treated for temperatures and other conditions, it'll be a seamless experience for consumers, and they'll be, helping to use a domestically homegrown renewable fuel supply.
Is that so? The biodiesel, it sounds like you're saying there's some restrictions on saying biodiesel is viable. I don't think that's what you're saying exactly, but I want to clarify. Biodiesel, do you consider it to be a viable source in the future, or is it always going to be a peripheral source?
Biodiesel will definitely be a viable source for the future in what we would expect, probably increasing concentrations.
Okay.
Today, the majority of biodiesel that's used, actually burned in diesel engines out there, is of the lower percentage blends, which I just mentioned, 5%
sure.
or less.
It's a fraction of the actual main fuel.
It is a very small fraction if we're looking at the total fuel pool in California or nationwide.
Okay.
And that's due to a variety of different factors. But there's certainly the renewable fuel standard and other things will help introduce more of these biofuels into the mainstream fuel supply.
Okay.
But you know, there's a good concern right now about getting very high quality of these fuels. And you mentioned the, you know, can I back up to a French fry place and filter it out and stick it in there?
And
that's exactly what we don't want people to think about when we're talking about, you know, renewable diesel fuel. You can collect those waste products, those waste oils, and take them to a centralized refinery and hydro-processing facility and yield a very high-quality fuel product. That's the direction that we're going.
But in reality, you're not going to be able to buy a 2014 diesel-powered vehicle and pull up to a fast food place and dump the French fry oil into your tank.
We wouldn't recommend it.
How about in a worst-case situation? You know, you're stuck on the road in the desert.
The issue for consumers is multifold. One is drivability. A lot of these you know, French fry oil can be a lot of things. It can be safflower oil, it can be sunflower oil, it can be canola oil.
Sure.
All these different vegetable oils have different combustion properties. So when you start mixing all these things together, it's hard to know exactly what you get.
Yeah.
So you can imagine as a manufacturer, it's quite difficult to design an engine that could burn on any range of combinations of things and deliver the same kind of great performance that you're used to getting with ultra-low sulfur diesel. So we've got some work to do to make sure that as we introduce more of these bio-based fuels into the mainstream fuel supply, that we're very high quality and the consumer experience is going to be great. It might work for a while, but it's not going to work very long, and it's going to completely gum up your engine foul up your emission system as
well. Got it. So what I'm hearing is, in concept, it'll fire the engine, but it'll also destroy some of the systems along the way, and you might not go as far as you thought you were to get. But in a pinch, functionally, hydrocarbon explosion-wise, it'll blow up in the combustion chamber. It just won't work well. I'm glad to just demystify the French fry oil story that people laugh about, and I hope the audience has learned and benefited by just getting closer to where are we at with diesel. And you're very optimistic. I know in your release, kidding about that Californians are gobbling them up, diesel-powered vehicles. You note some highlights. Audi A6 with 38 miles per gallon. Chevrolet Cruze with 46 miles per gallon with a range of 700 miles with a 28% advantage, almost 30% more efficiency in terms of range than its gasoline-powered counterpart. That's the Chevrolet Cruze clean turbo diesel for the 2014 model. Alan, do you see the diesel as the dominant fuel at some point in the future, by 2020 or 2030, or what's the thought inside your thinking group?
The answer to the question is no. Yeah. I think that there's going to be, I think by all accounts from all the international energy agencies and our own government energy agencies here in California's Energy Commission, gasoline and diesel fuels are going to remain the predominant transportation fuels well into the 2030, 2040, and even 2050 timeframe. So we have a number of, evolutions yet to go in the internal combustion engine burning our conventional gas and diesel fuels. So, but, the question is, where does it go? Today, diesel makes up about 3% of the total market of vehicles, and that's been a pretty steady percentage, and it's actually picked up a little bit in the last year or two as more models have come out. The projections are that by 2023 we could see as much as almost 18% of the market being diesel in the U.S., and that's a big range, though, and I've picked the most optimistic number, and I think others are probably in the 7 or 8% to as much as 18%. So, optimistically, we're seeing a great response from consumers to the new generation of cars. California is the number one state for buying clean diesel cars, and it's also the fastest growing state for consumers to invest in clean diesel cars. So
what's the percentage of, in Europe, what's the percentage of diesel vehicles versus gasoline powered? Do you know?
Yeah, overall in the EU, it's I think last year it's right around 50.1%.
So even in Europe, it's not 100%. You know, of course, it's not 100%, but it's not even close to 100%. It's about one out of every two vehicles is diesel powered.
Right.
Okay.
You know, California is going to be a place where it's going to be unique. There are going to be higher percentages of electric vehicles there because of all the government incentive programs.
Right.
But diesels are projected to continue to grow. I don't have any specific numbers for California forecasting, but we would expect it to follow those same lines, given California's already market leadership position with the new generation of clean diesel.
You might want the audience to know where to go, your website and so on, for information such as, I look over here at your listing of vehicles, Volkswagen Passat TDI clean diesel of the 2013 model has a 43 mile per gallon fuel economy rating, and then the range of 796 miles, which is almost 40% more mileage than you'd have with a gasoline-powered counterpart. The Mercedes-Benz E250 BlueTEC, the 2014, gets 45 miles per gallon, has a 950-mile range, and that's 50% better than its gasoline counterpart. What's the website you want us to go to?
Yeah, for all that information and more, you can visit our website, www.dieselforum.org. And we're a nonprofit association, so we're interested in talking with all folks about this new generation of technology, and we really appreciate the chance to be with you today.
Alan Schaefer, you've been very thoughtful in your information as a teacher. You've gone down to a very basic level with these questions. I know you're living in much more complex issues when you go to the government affairs level, and certainly with California Air Resources Board and so on. So congratulations on the progress you're making, and thank you for your time. And thank all of you for joining us for this segment from the Car Guy Show. Join us here again next week for another journey into the world of wheels. Keeping you car wise, I'm Steve Ford, the Car Guy.